All right. So we got Malachim Aleph Perek Tet Vav, and thanks for whatever it is called. What we have over here is the story of two kings. One is very, very bad, and one is very, very good. Okay, kings of Yehuda, Aviam and Asa. Now, what's interesting is you read about Aviam, and it's just negative, right? Who was Aviam's father?
Yerovam.
Okay, Aviam, not Yerovam.
Rechavam.
Yeah. And all we have is negative stuff about him. But turn to Divrei Hayamim Bet. Okay, turn to Divrei Hayamim Bet. Perek Yud Gimel. Perek Yud Gimel. Starting from Pasuk. Let's see. Divrei Hayamim Bet, Perek Yud Gimel. Pasuk Dalet.
Avija stood up on the mount of Zemaraim, which is in the hills of Ephraim, and he said, "Hear me, Yerovam, and all of Israel. Surely you should know that Hashem, God of Israel, gave kingship over Israel to David forever, to him and his children, for an everlasting covenant." You go.
Dalet 3, Yud Bet.
But Yerovam, son of Nebat, a servant of Shlomo, son of David, got up and rebelled against his master. Worthless, lawless people gathered around him, and they set themselves resolutely against Rehoboam, son of Shlomo. When Rehoboam was young and weak-hearted, and did not stand up firmly against them. And now you intend to stand defiantly before the king of Hashem that is in the hands of David's descendants. You are a great multitude, and with you are the golden calves that Rehoboam has made for you as gods. Have you not dismissed the Kohanim of Hashem, the sons of Aaron, and the Levites, and made for yourselves priests like the nations of the land? Anyone who comes forward to initiate himself with a young bull and seven rams becomes a priest to the non-god. But as for us, Hashem is our God, and we have not forsaken him. The priests minister to Hashem are the sons of Aaron, and the Levites do their work. Also, they burn burnt offerings to Hashem every morning and every evening, as well as incense of spices, and there is an array of bread upon the pure table, and a golden scent candelabrum.
Candelabrum.
Candelabrum. And its lamps to kindle every evening, for we observe the charge of Hashem, our God, while you have forsaken him. Behold, with us, at our head, our God and his Kohanim, and the blasting trumpets to blast against you. Children of Israel, do not wage war against Hashem, the God of your forefathers, for you will not succeed.
Okay. So, it's very interesting. Here it is, you have a Divrei Hayamim, this impassioned speech, saying you rebelled against Beit David, but more importantly, or just at least as important, he rebelled against God. And he's calling on everyone to do tshuva. So why isn't any of that found in Sefer Malachim? Sefer Malachim, we have this very negative view. And over here, it's quite positive view. Yeah. What do you make of this? Also, we have two different names for this king. How is he referred to over here? How is he referred to over there?
Abijai.
Okay. Aviyah.
Yeah.
As opposed to Malachim Aviyam. Which sounds more positive?
Without them.
Alright, Aviyah, Shem Hashem. Aviyah, God is my father. Alright? Aviyah. And here's Aviyam, so.
There.
What do you think? Why?
Two different kings.
Same person. Who wrote Sefer Malachim? Who wrote Sefer Divrei Hayamim? Yirmiyahu. Who wrote Divrei Hayamim?
Ezra.
Ezra lived many years later. So I think what you could say is Ezra came upon this speech. So he puts it in there. Why didn't Yirmiyahu put it in? Well, the simple thing is he never heard knew about it. Okay, possible. Or you could say Yirmiyahu knew that the speech was political. It had nothing to do with God. Somebody, every politician today now is making all of his claims. He's saying, oh, do this, I'm going to do this. You have every politician putting in all the Jewish, in all the religious, Dafe, Shabbat, there are different things, you know, oh, we care about Shabbos. They say whatever they can to get the votes. But this is exactly what Aviyah is saying. That's why Yirmiyahu didn't even call him Aviyah. I'm sure his father called him Aviyah. Called him Aviyam. He's nothing. He's a nobody. He's a politician. He says that it's all about rebelled against God, really just wants to be the king over all of Israel. Mm-hmm. And therefore, Yirmiyahu doesn't even give it ink and say for Malachim, it's not worth it because it was all politically motivated. Now, let's go back to Malachim. There are some interesting things, though. At the end of the previous parak, we're already told that Rehoboam and Yerovam wore all the days of their lives. Pasuk Lamed. Umechamaita, Perak Yudal, Pasuk Lamed. Chamaita ben Yerovam, Uben Yerovam, Kol Yamin. And then it's repeated in our parak. Pasuk Vav. Right? Pasuk Vav. Right? What does it say?
It was warfare.
Why is that to repeat it? So one of the first ones that I saw said it's quite possible that even during the lifetime of Rehoboam, Aviyam was involved. He was maybe he was a general in the army. So therefore, it can be it's mentioned again, even after his father died, because like a continuation of his father, the battle goes on. He's just filling in and continuing. Mm-hmm. Now. It would seem that Aviyah was highly involved in battles. Okay. What's also important for us is Aviyah becomes the king, even though Rehoboam had older sons. But we're told in the earlier parak that Rehoboam loved his mother Ma'acha, and therefore made this particular son the king. Okay.
Is he allowed to do that?
I guess so. I mean, David did the same thing with Shlomo, right?
Well, don't kill though. No, I mean, all the rest of them died.
No. Adoniah was alive. That's why Adoniah goes and rebels, right? He tries to usurp himself the throne.
Yeah.
Now, Macha was not a good influence. And there's lots of Oda that's brought in during the time of her son. And this is why the speech in Malachim Aleph is left out. You know, the speech that we had in Devar HaYamim is sitting there talking about, oh, I care all about God. Really? You care about God? You bring all this up with Azar? So it's a little bit odd. Here it is. So we're just saying what he is. He's a Rasha, right?
Right.
So now the question is, why are we mentioning David here in the middle of this? Okay? In your English, it even has it in parentheses. Like, we mention that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is upset at him, but he's not going to rip away the Malchus totally from him because of his love for David. And then it goes out of its way to say, and David was great in everything except what? Pasuk Hey.
Just for the matter of Berea the people.
Okay. So the question is, why do I have to mention the sin of Uriah here? Mm-hmm. The whole idea was, I am going to keep a Malchus in Yehuda because of my love for David, because of how good he is. Why does there need to say the except? Why do I need to say except? Also, this is not the only time David's been mentioned. David's been mentioned several times already in Malachim. We'll care about other kings. Why here are we mentioning the sin of Uriah? And the third question is, why are we only saying Uriah? Why are we not saying Bathsheba?
Maybe because we're on the topic.
The sin was through Uri. That was like...
Wasn't the first sin with Bathsheba?
Maybe because we're on the topic of...
The whole thing was through Uri. Uriah.
I mean, what maybe the whole sin was through Uriah?
The fact that...
But if you wouldn't have gotten married? I mean, he slept with a married woman. How can we not mention Bathsheba? You have a question?
Yeah.
Look, you could say, the simple answer would be, oh, there's a proof that there was no sin with Bathsheba. The way some of the Parshim wanted to say, if you recall when we got there, that it was okay, she wasn't an Eshet Ish, she got to get Milchama, all those sorts of other ideas that we mentioned in the past. Possible. Uriah's sin was a cover-up. Right? Covering up for what happened with Bathsheba. But still, why mention here? So, here's this idea from Rav Menashe Avinu. The whole case with Uriah Achiti, what did Chazal say? How come David was allowed to kill him?
Mori b'malchus.
Mori b'malchus. But as we mentioned then, very difficult to call it Mori b'malchus. Okay? He brought him back What's Uriah thinking? Oh, middle of war. Must be that I'm getting called back for something very important. They're opening up a new front. He wants me to lead battle, going off to the east. You know, but it's like, oh, how things going? Good? All right, yeah, why don't you go back and hang out with your wife a little bit? What? So the fact that he says no, and then David kills him for saying no, after he brought him back just to cover up his indiscretions, is problematic. And even referring to him as Adoni Yoav, and he said, ah, how could I go and sleep with him? Adoni Yoav is in the field.
Yeah.
You could understand why he's upset, saying, like, I'm going back for a little R&R. I don't understand why I was brought back in the first place. So we can understand what's going on. And if you, even if you want to say, well, it doesn't matter, you don't talk to the king like that, so then fine, have him executed it through Beis Din. What's with the sending a letter to Yoav to have him killed in battle? Very, very strange. And if so, says Rav Menashe Wiener, maybe we can understand the connection now. Both seem justified in their actions. David sending Uriah to his death because Merib Malchus. Aviah having this big speech calling on everyone to come back to Malchus Yehuda because you rebelled against God. So on the surface, it looks good. But if Aviah really went to war because they worshipped the Agalim, as he says in Divrei Hayamim, they smashed, you know, that they're worshipping the golden calves, he should have smashed them when he conquered Beit El. And he doesn't. And if so, we see, as I mentioned before, that it was really just political. If so, both of them are false justifications, and that's the connection to David. The connection is, there is a sin here. Maybe you look at it and think that there's not a sin. No. There is definitely a sin here. The way that Aviah's speech is insincere, David's using Morib Malchus as a reason, a rationale, is insincere. Mm-hmm. Okay? This is Rav Menashe Wiener's idea. I think it's an interesting idea. Now, then we come to Asa. Asa is a great king. How great a king? Just to take a quick look at, once again, go to Divrei Hayamim, Bet, chapter 14, Pasuk 10. Okay, 1968 in the Pasuk, on the page. Just read in English. Read out loud. No, 1968.
What page?
Yud.
Yud. But as for us, Hashem is our God.
Wait, where are you?
13.
10.
13?
No. Chapter 14, plus 14. 10. 1968, that's what I told you.
Oh, 1968.
Okay. Oh, I was going to keep it, my bad.
Okay, that's something.
1969.
Yeah. Okay. They were gathered in Yerushalayim.
No, Asa called.
They also...
Where are you?
Asa called out to Hashem, his God, saying, Hashem, there is none besides you to help in battle between the many and those with no strength. Help us, Hashem, our God, for we depend on you. We have come in your name against this great multitude. You are Hashem, our God. Let no human muster strength against you.
I read this pasuk and it sounds to me like Yonatan before he went to go take on the Plishtim with his just with his sword bearer.
Yeah.
Asa, unbelievable Amuna, great king. All right, let's discuss a little bit about Asa. Okay, he's going to be a king for 41 years. It's more than both David and Shlomo. Okay, not that, and he gets rid of all the avodah zarah. Okay, it's a very good king. Now, what's interesting is he probably became a king at a very young age, because Rehoboam was the king, and then when he died at the age of 58, his son Aviam takes over. He's the king for only 3 years. So Rehoboam would have been 61. So how old? Now also we have to keep in mind is we said that Rehoboam's picking of Aviam, he didn't take his oldest son. He had older sons. Okay? So even if he would have been his oldest son, okay, let's say right now, when I'm 61, my oldest grandson will be 16, Bezrat Hashem. Okay? But that's my oldest grandson. He already had other older kids. So even if he wants to get married younger, I don't know, maybe he did, maybe he didn't, I got married pretty young. There's no way Asa is older than his teens. Okay? Probably his young teens. Maybe even younger. And therefore I understand what happens when he becomes the king. Who is helping him out? His grandmother. Okay, you look at the psukim, it's so weird. How is he introduced? When Asa becomes the king, Vishnat Desrim Liravam, look at Pasuk Tet. Okay? So it says, let's see. Pasuk Yud. Va'arim v'chat shana malach b'Yerushalayim v'shem imo ma'acha bat Avishalom. Who's his mother? Ma'acha bat Avishalom. But we were just told in Pasuk Bet that how long was Aviyam king? 3 years. Shalosh shana malach b'Yerushalayim v'shem imo ma'acha bat Avishalom. So what? Father and son had the same mother? I mean, I guess it's possible. There's a Gemara like that in Makos that we're going to get to later on. But that's like, we're not talking about incest going on over here. So what is the story? It's his grandmother. But since he's such a young kid, she now is basically in control. If, as we said, Rechavam would have been the ripe old age of 61 when he takes office, so we could assume that Ma'acha is somewhere in her 50s, and she's the one that's calling the shots. And she starts doing things, and she starts bringing in Avodah Zarah. Okay? There's Avodah Zarah that's being brought in because she's in charge. That's why the Pasuk refers to her as mother. It's not like a grandmother. You just visit her once in a while. She was like the queen mother. Okay? They used to be like a place for the queen mother. She, the grandmother, was like the queen mother. Mm. And therefore, much to his... there's a lot to admire that he rebels against the Avodah Zarah, gets rid of the Avodah Zarah, even the Avodah Zarah that his queen mother brought in. Right? Mm-hmm. He does this. So, and then when he's attacked, even though he had a massive army, and he had a home field advantage, meaning... You know the terrain, no lack of supplies. He should be able to repel the attack of Zerah HaKushi. He panics and he turns to Hashem. And there's mass tshuva and victory. And this leads to a reenactment of the Brit of Har Sinai. If you read these psukim, that's what it sort of sounds like. In here, turn to Divrei Hayamim. Now I'll go to chapter 15 there. It's like 1970, let's see. Yes. Read Psukim 10 through... Is this it? No.
15:10?
Yes.
They were gathered in Jerusalem in the third month of the 15th year of Asa's reign. They brought offerings to Hashem on that day from the spoils that they had taken, 700 cattle and 7,000 sheep. They entered into a covenant to seek out Hashem, the God of their forefathers, with all their heart and with all their soul. And anyone who would not seek Hashem, God of Israel, will be put to death, whether small or great, man or woman. They swore to Hashem in a loud voice and with shouts, with trumpets, and with shofars. All Judah rejoiced over the oath, for they had sworn with all their heart. They had sought Him with all their desire, and He was accessible to them. And Hashem had granted them rest all around them.
Right? It sounds exactly like Mamet Har Sinai. We have shofrot. We have acceptance of a covenant. This is beautiful. So now my question is, what goes wrong? Later on, Asa turns to Aram to fight against Baasha. He pays money from the treasury of the Beit HaMikdash to bribe him into fighting against Malchus Yisrael. Join me into fighting against Malchus Yisrael. What happened to our tzaddik? Right, he's such a great guy. All of a sudden, this man with a munah is now bribing goyim to come and fight against Jews. Bad enough the Jews are having a civil war, but now we have to get goyim to come in and fight with us. Not that Baasha is good. Baasha is not good. Baasha repeats the sin of Yerovam, separating the kingdoms. He didn't want people returning to Jerusalem, so he makes sure there's borders and everyone stays in the northern kingdom. But still, what happened? How come our tzaddik turned into a kofar? Now, it's possible that he felt betrayed by Hashem. The psukim say that Asa had problems with his feet and he couldn't walk. And he felt like, this is the type of reward that I get. And here's where Rabbi Menashe Wiener goes very strongly. He says it's very interesting. Idea. He says like this. We had said before that the Nabi came to Beit El on the opening day of the Egel Azab and said that there's going to be a king that's going to come and destroy all this. Right? And just to prove that I'm telling the truth, it's going to crack open, ash going to fly up, and all that stuff happened. And we said, who is that? Yoshiah was not going to be born for another 300 years. If you are, there's two questions. Question number one, I would say, is if I'm a melech in Yehuda, and I don't want there to be a split, I want there to be a one kingdom over all of it, and I heard this nevuah, I would name my son Yoshiahu. Wouldn't that be the move? Zimiki, name Yoshiahu. In fact, I would name every single one of my kids Yoshiahu. Alright? Yoshiahu the first, Yoshiahu the second. I don't know, name all. How come it takes 300 years till somebody decides to name his kid Yoshiahu? If the Navi said it, wow, what an idiot. You know?
Just name it.
What?
Yeah, you're right. Just name it.
Okay, so here's what I think the simple answer is, but I'll give you Rabbi Menashe Biner's answer afterwards. The simple answer is, as you said, who wrote Sefer Malachim?
Yirmiyahu.
When the Navi made his claim, he didn't say a name. When he made his claim, he said, there's going to be a king that's going to come and destroy it all. When it happened later, so Yirmiyahu, who was writing in hindsight, says that king was Yoshiahu. Right? So I'm not bothered by it. I think that's the Pashup shot. Okay, but Rabbi Menashe Biner was, and his argument was, he was named Yoshiahu. Asa could have been that guy. But he messed up. He should have been the Yoshiahu. And that's why the Pasuk tells us. Turn to now, once again, back to the Rei Yamim. Go to 1970. Let's guess. Perek Tet Zayin. Pasuk Yabet. And yes, 1970. Okay. Pasuk Yabet. What does it say? V'yichala Asa b'shnat shloshim etesh l'malchuto v'raglav. He got sick in his legs. Ad l'mala chalyo. Gam chalyo lo derash et Hashem ki berofim. What's with gam b'chalyo? Also, here, he didn't go to God. He went to the doctors. That was it also to go to the doctors? No, it's not also to go to the doctors. But what
only,
it's saying here.
Only doctors.
Right. So what's going on here is this is personality. He doesn't go to God. Just like when it came to military, he's making an alliance with Aram to fight against the Shomron. Here as well, he only goes to the doctors. He's not talking to God.
He should have gone to Hashem.
Right. And how do you say medicine in Aramaic? Asa. And therefore, this is what Menashe Biner wanted to suggest. That he was named Yoshiahu. But the Navi ends up calling him Asa because, oh, you went to the doctors? We'll just call you Doc. Right? You could have been Yoshiahu, but instead, you became Doc. Right? That's his idea. I think it's a very interesting idea. Yeah.